yes, my friends. It's the Sharon Sleeve Show.
Take my hat, take my coat, take my gloves, I'll take a cup. Take my money, but I'm begging, please don't take my suit. Take my house, take my clothes, take my wife, lighten up my load. Take my feet, you can take my toes, but please don't take my shoe.
From the downtowniest part of New York City, the city that never sleeps, the city that never weeps, the city where nothing keeps. Coming to you live on WCJD 90.2, New York, high atop the Empire State Building.
I must say it is a bit odd to sing along with oneself. I don't know, I have never noticed that before. I sing along with my own damn self. That isn't right. Well, it's been some time, hasn't it? It's been months since I've done a Radio Ghost episode. I think I've posted some audio explanations, audio excuses. But really, when it gets down to it, I don't have anything very clear to say, other than I had a bit of work to do, and I felt like going off and sitting for a while on a distant hill. And I didn't exactly know that that's what I was up to. I thought at any moment I would tire of the distant hill and come right back to this seat and continue on as before. But I kept on working and resting, I suppose. But not exactly resting, I was doing work. Different types of work, this and that. But anyway, I thought this evening, well, I miss that old ghost, that old radio ghost. Why don't I go sit in the old chair and fire up the inferno, see what happens. So this will be a very casual, very easy going show, for me at least. We have two or three bits of audio. Sean did a story for public radio on a gentleman who's building a castle on a cliff. So we'll play that. I also did a short piece on, well, on time, I suppose. On time and on, I suppose you could call Stick my pez or my friend or my good luck charm. It would play that as well. And then I think Sean said that he had a piece of wander around audio. We'll put that in too. So we'll start off like this. Easy going, no pressure, no thought. Not that pressure in and of itself was doing anything adverse to me. I wasn't on the distant hill because of pressures. It wasn't that. Although there was a kind of tiredness, kind of fatigue that I think cycles around. But I wasn't depressed. Some people worried I was depressed or upset. No, not at all. I was well, in fact. I simply wanted to go over there and be over there for some unknown time, fully expecting to return at any moment. So let's start off with what? Let's begin with Sean's piece for public radio on the castle on the cliff, and we'll be right back after that, to talk a bit more.
If you look west from the summit of Welch or Dickey Mountain, you might see the small white smile on the distant cliff across the valley. In fact, the swoop of granite and mortar is a man-made wall, a grand terrace, as described by the man who made it, single-handedly, stone by stone, over the course of many years. Lance Keene.
Now, the grand terrace is 116 feet long and 14 feet high in the middle. And it's in a big semicircle out on the cliff face.
As it happens, there's a little bit of a castle situation going on here in Thornton. To make it less likely, more edgy and a little higher in the air, it's a castle on a cliff situation.
Now you can see we're coming out on the cliff face here. When I just stepped out onto this cliff face 13, 14 years ago, it just took my breath away. And still, every single time I come out here, I have the same feeling. I look at this view and I say, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is the coolest place in the world.
To some, the perfect spot for a picnic. To others, or maybe just to Lance, it's the perfect spot to build a castle.
Well, when I explain this project to people, a lot of people just don't understand it. I think a castle, you know, but what I found a better way to explain it over the years is I tell people, this is my lifelong art project. And when I put it in that context, like, oh, you're an artist. Okay, so then it seems to make sense to people.
As we walk the muddy switchbacks, Lance is cut against the mountain so the building trucks can get to the site. He tells me about the origins of his castle dream.
I was a soldier in the army, and I was stationed in Germany. One of the popular things to do is to go out and visit castles on the weekend. So I really love the style of the castles. There's some permanence. There's something special about stone.
After the army, and feeling somewhat adrift, Lance set down on paper three things he wanted for his life.
The goals were move back to New Hampshire where I grew up. I'm originally from Laconia. Find the woman of my dreams, settle down and start a family, and build a medieval stone castle.
What's eccentric there is pretty obvious. But what's common, almost universal, hides a little below the zigzag of castle making. Because this is just Lance's version of the white picket fence and the heart-shaped shutters. All his goals circle the same thing, each one a different way of saying home.
Were you shy about sharing the fact that you were doing this for a while?
I was. Yes, for the first 5 years, I was a closet stonemason. I didn't tell people about this. It was kind of my little secret passion. But then I became more open. I guess it was, fear of failure. And so something that happens that people don't tell others about such a project, because if they fail to do it, then they have to tell all their friends that they failed. So I was a victim of that. But then I decided, I'm doing this. I'm really, really going to do this.
Lance lives in nearby Campton for now. He's married with two young girls and owns a small software company. The stony and medieval action of his third goal is well underway. He's got a builder and a construction team, and the lower and main terrace are complete.
I've been working on this for many years, and people always ask me, so when are you going to be done? I say, that's the wrong question, because this is my lifelong art project. I will never be done. The more important question is, when can you move in? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we'll be doing next year. If everything goes to plan, we hope to be in here by snowfall of next year.
After the frame is up, when the family moves in, Lance will begin to add stone to the long walls and round turrets. From one perspective, it will be a home, and Lance will be a homeowner with a mortgage to pay. But it will also be a castle, and he will be the king. He may never issue royal proclamations, or wear a crown, or sit upon anything but a normal kitchen chair. But regardless, it's the castle on the ground that will count. And so Long live the king. For word of mouth, I'm Sean Hurley.
There's a period of time when I listen to this music. It's Harold Budd and Brian Eno together. The album is called The Pearl. Ultimately very, very somber and depressing collection of music. But not depressing in a way that I would suggest you stay away from it. Unless you should stay away from such things. And I do believe that if you are someone who is sensitive and often in such unfeeling clearings that depression and other down feelings might create that you might want to stay away from this, but as for myself, who I would say is on the darker side of the spectrum, quite contentedly on the darker side of the spectrum, I find reflections of my mood to be somewhat buoyant, so that I may feel somewhat melancholy and listen to melancholic music, and at the end of it I feel quite joyful, fit and working again, as Mark E. Smith might call it. So I noticed a short while back, I've spoken before that I don't often carry a watch. I do have a watch. I don't wear it. I hang it on a hook. And when I do think to use it, I go, and it's usually for decorative purposes, I have to go into town for some funeral or something like that. I might think to wear it to look like a proper citizen, complete with all the items required, tie, hat, shoes, socks, things in my pocket. So I don't wear a watch unless it's for others to behave for comportment's sake. And not only that, but I don't have a clock in the cabin. Not a proper clock. Of course, I have computers and there are clocks on them, but I can hardly see the numbers and don't reference them. So I've moved a bit beyond time. Not in a large, large way, but for the most part. Of course, if I need to be somewhere on time, I will keep an eye out. I will make sure I know. But there was a little experience I had a month or so back with a stick. And it turned into some strange relationship between myself and his stick. It's impossible, perhaps, to understand, but it's true. I have this stick now inside, and I talk to it some now and then. And it was through this relationship with stick that I realized that I do have my own time scale. I have two senses of time. I realized that I don't think I should spill it all out because I put it together in this little package of a story, but I'm already there. So I have two ways of describing time. I have moments, which are short spans of time, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, in which usually a chore is accomplished. So I found myself saying to Stick, I'll be back in a moment. When I was going to the dump, when I was going out to my shed to fetch something. And then I again noticed later on, I said, Stick, I'll be back in a while. And I was going off for a walk. Of indeterminate length. How long? I had no idea when I would be back. I didn't know. But so these two distinctions became noticed. Moments and whiles. And that those are the primary things through which I moved. Moments, I had many moments during the day. Valuable sections, chores that got accomplished. And then I needed a few whiles to give me a sense of purpose. And so, and then I began calling them for whatever reason. I live alone, so I do this. I decorate my life in the way that I like. I started calling the moments owls, and I started calling the whiles old pink moons. So, here is my late senescent sense of time, the owl and the old pink moon. Just before the yellow dial of daybreak, there sits upon the world a kind of leftover light, something pressed out from the night, like a rag upon the counter, the moth of the pre-dawn sky. I usually manage to sleep beyond the ache of this vivid poultice, but some while back I found myself awake and done with sleep. I went to stand for a moment in the garden of my grey windows and gazed upon the bad photograph the world had become. I wandered with rubbing eyes and then finally went outside to see the world. Windless empty harbour, unscented with a sky of slush and bone. But then my eye was caught by a curious line. From the roof shingle, from a thread of cobweb, was suspended a long and barkless stick. A huge branch it was, hanging spectacularly from a spider's string. I raced inside for my camera to future-proof the miracle. Could I find, I wondered, the magic spider whose Amazonian filament might well be the world's next great textile? Something for spaceships, for sporting goods, for sports cars, for tug-of-wars. But my heart went cold as I came back out. The stick had dropped. The miracle was done. The hero had fallen. I brought the stick inside and leaned it against the wall beside the door, where I thought it might do well. It remains there to this day. Now I have no cat or fish or family, but I do now have stick, and you may laugh at such a pet or friend, but it is more, and I see it as, a kind of charm. An extraordinary bit of commonplace I like to keep near, for never has so heavy a stick hung from so thin a bit of spider spit, and there was hope in that I felt. When I can't find and can't remember what it is that I have lost, old stick is there, for a there, leaning, post facto, impartial, and yet elegant and casual in his pose, worldly and indifferent to the lures of fresh glory. His work on earth, as mine, is done. Nothing left now but the leaning. If he cannot help me in these small matters, he has yet helped me in the large. For without stick, I would never have learned about the owls and the old pink moon. What I mean to say is that I wouldn't have discovered that my days aren't crept by blade into the smithereens of separate seconds, or butter-knifed into a fell of hours, that there is no such thing for me is a single minute. Back in a moment, stick, I heard myself call out to him last week. I was off to the dump with a delivery of bags. As I travelled down the mountain, I wondered if I hadn't misspoken. What did I mean to imply with that moment? In prior days, I might have said that a moment was a second with its trousers down, but it seemed to me, suddenly then, that though my chore would take some section of an hour, my calling it a moment was regardless, at least for myself, at least between Stick and I. Quite fine. Exactly correct, in fact. The following day, I noted a second bit of time speak. Back in a while, Stick, I heard myself saying. I was off for a walk of unknowable duration. Where I was going, and when I would be back, no thing or machine on earth could say. It was upon that moment that I next realized how I wore no watch upon my wrist and kept no ticking in my life, that I had only these two distinctions now. I had moments and whiles. I had owls, as I came to think of them, and old pink moons. The owl of a moment is brief and more directed. It is a chore accomplished. A trip to the dump is an owl. Washing the dishes is an owl, is a moment. Tending my garden, getting myself ready for bed. All moments, all owls. But my wiles, my old pink moons, have no such arrivals or completions. Not missions, but gatherings and recognitions, reminders, where I gather up and reconvene and become my own principle and summation. A long walk to nowhere is a while. Writing in my journal, that is a while. That is an old pink moon. Because of Stick, I have noticed my fairy tale of time. I have also discovered that to make a day good, I need two pink moons and a half dozen owls. In other words, six chores and two adventures in my own general direction. If, upon an evening, I find myself shipwrecked at my windowsill, I may call out to Stick. Stick, what is it that I missed? Was it an owl or a moon? Stick will only ever lean out his response, and therefore I do as well. We share more than that, I have come to see. We have both now done our primary performance, both done our strong hanging from the web, both clattered gamely to the ground. And now both of us, in our final leaning, with our dishes and our long walks to nowhere, back in a while, Stick, back in a moment, our fairy tale version of minutes and hours. Ah, once upon a time, until the end.
The owl and the old pink moon both wait and fly away. The universe, a paradise so small and large and bright. Where the owl goes flying,
again a little more Harold Bards and Brian Eno from The Pearl. His song is called, I think, Stream, A Stream with Bright Fish. It does feel like you're perched along a river at night. You could look down into the dark water and see the silvery flares. The silvery flares of the fish. So I think that'll almost just about do it. We'll say some final things and then we'll call it a night, just to safely get ourselves to the end of this patchwork bit of a radio ghost. What I'm thinking is that if if it's possible to next week or so do a live Radio Ghosts, start things up a bit. Maybe do them weekly, I don't know. I don't want to say that, yes, it will be that, and then all of a sudden I'll be back on my hill again. I do know this, the summer is never... it's never a clear, unconfused time for me. It's a hazy, mind-twisted time. And again, though, not, I wasn't upset. I get lost, though. I get lost in the summers. I'm no longer sure what's happening. I don't know what that is, but for all of my life, I've done better in the cold. The colder, the better. And yet again, I like the changing of the seasons. I wouldn't put the summer out to pasture. I wouldn't forbid it. I think it's required. I think my confusion, my uncertainty is needed. All these cycles need to be permitted. We move from the heat to the frost. We move from the clear to the uncertain. We move from action to passive, from running to sitting. I'm trying to celebrate what was for me incidental. The fact that I went to the hill was incidental, and I'm trying to make it sound so there were some stroke of great thought, but there was not. But there was ease. It was not hard for me to go to the hill. In fact, all of a sudden I realized I was there. So I'd come to the end of some race. And it was both comfortable and convenient for me to sit down. But then I had no very fine explanation other than, well, I think I'll just sit here for a time. So we may, for a moment, once again picture the moon. Picture Mr. Neil Armstrong stepping down upon it, saying his mighty words, scripted beforehand or not. And the fact that he's died now, just yesterday or the day before, to me it is almost as though we, as people, can no longer, at this moment, reach out across space and touch the moon. That our representative has dissolved. That our little fingertips can no longer reach. That is how it feels to me, at least. Good night, Neil. Good night, moon. Good night, silver. Good night, soon. Good night, my friends. It is tired, and I am late. Always merry and bright. Talk to you soon.
It's tired, I'm your frozen fire, turn out the light. Tomorrow we'll sleep through town, side every turn up, thing down. But now it's time to sleep. It's tired, I'm late. Untie your candles, well, I just lit the skates. We're sleeping in sleep at light. Come dreams that were seeping right. But now it's time to sleep.
Hit a ball now. Yeah, I told you about all them dreams I had. Now I lay down in the sea. In the moonlight, anytime I just pull it, I surprise.
It's tired, I'm late. Your frozen fire, turn out the light. Tomorrow we'll sleep through town, side every turn up, thing down. But now it's time to sleep.